and welcome to the Art of Balance podcast, brought to you by Balanceology, with me, Dylan Cox, and my wife, and author of the best-selling book, Burnout to Brilliance, Jane Morris. Jane is also a regular contributor to Psychology's magazine. Together, we take a light-hearted approach whilst doing deep dives into topics that we believe can help improve your day-to-day lives. If you like what you hear, you can follow us on Instagram at balanceology.uk, or alternatively, visit our website, balanceology.uk. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about all things narcissism, from over-narcissists like Donald Trump and Lance Armstrong, right down to your covert, more shyer narcissists that you may encounter in your day-to-day lives, both at home and at work. Jane and I will explain how you can identify a narcissist and also give you tips and strategies of how you can deal with them and ultimately improve your relationships and empower yourself to not be affected by them. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Episode number 10, we're into double digits for the podcast, Jane, and today's episode, wow, that was quite the cheer. Wasn't expecting that. Well, we've got to celebrate our own successes, I guess. And today's episode is all about narcissism. Now, narcissism comes in different forms, and we have overt narcissists and covert narcissists. And just today, I was reading in the news that an open letter had been sent by former and maybe current employees of the brewing company BrewDog, which have been a bit of a disruptor in the beer industry, because they are a large scale craft beer business, and they've kind of had this kind of cool and innovative marketing strategy since they started, 15 years ago. And they had a kind of image as being this sort of anti-big corporate organization. But it turns out, from the letter that was written by the staff and former staff, that there was very much a toxic work culture there. And the belief from the staff members was that it was a top-down kind of culture that came from the two founders, and in particular one of the founders. And in that letter, they'd basically mentioned about lack of empathy, lack of sympathy towards staff, sweeping things under the carpet, overwork, leading to staff burnout and mental health issues. And some of the words that they use, such as gaslighting and other words, linked in quite a lot to narcissism. And you would say that maybe the owners themselves or the founders had narcissistic personality tendencies. So, with that being the sort of setting for today, it's probably worth just exploring and talking about how overt narcissists are sort of widespread in our society, both at corporate level and in an everyday level, and how coaching can help you to deal with those relationships that you may have with overt narcissists.
Yes, great. Well, really as well, covert narcissism as well, I believe, is probably just as widespread. It's just that it's harder to spot, so we're not as aware of it. But definitely what is rife and obvious right now is the more grandiose narcissism. And it's becoming so much part of our, or the platforms in our culture are there, which can enable someone with narcissistic tendencies to
Social media.
To rise and sort of be in the limelight far more easily than perhaps 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I guess we're just so more aware of it now because we're overwhelmed with it in a certain sense.
Yeah, and figures of all descriptions. So somebody, for example, like Brian Rose, through to people who are profess to be rather spiritual, but really are fairly deluded and rubbing their wealth in people's faces and with very little humility and sense of wanting to bring balance.
I always think of those guys that are like, if you watch a YouTube video, and I don't know why it comes up on my videos that I watch, it's probably something to do with an algorithm, but they're always trying to sell me something. Do you want this course? And da 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 da. And I just think they know that they're talking about themselves being coaches, maybe, but they're, what they're doing is selling a course for training, whilst they're not actually doing any coaching. And it's just, it seems just so narcissistic the way in which they're doing it. And it's all about them, and it's all about they're making money and they're not like actually doing the thing that they're supposed to be doing, which is helping other people.
Well, I'm just thinking on Brian Rose as you were saying
So Brian Rose, if people don't know who he is, he set up London Real, and probably 7 or 8 years ago I started watching his videos because he had some interesting guests. But quickly into watching those videos, I realised that there was something a little bit off about him that I wasn't sure about. And as time sort of went by, I realised actually he is pretty much a narcissist. And that's kind of imploded a little bit because a lot of people now have come to that same conclusion. And he has had a bit of backlash, but he is plowing on. And yeah, he's a great example of someone who just doesn't care what people think, I think.
So there's one indication, he doesn't care what people think. How would other people who have no idea what narcissism is or are kind of just getting their head around it identify someone as a narcissist in the way that you have with Brian Rose?
Okay, so there's 9 key traits, and usually to be clinically diagnosed as having a narcissistic personality disorder, you'd have to meet 5 of these traits as a minimum. So the first one is grandiosity. So delusions of grandeur, I guess. Right. Preoccupation with success and power, a belief in being unique, a sense of entitlement to special treatment, they require excessive admiration. They're envious of others, a lack of empathy, exploiting others to achieve personal gain, and being arrogant and domineering. So we all have small elements of some of those traits, I'm sure. And, you know, if something comes out occasionally or very infrequently, that doesn't mean you have a disorder. That's just situational, and it's not necessarily a big deal. But if you're continually exhibiting many of those traits, then that's when, or someone is exhibiting them to you, that is when you should start like thinking, okay, this person may have a personality disorder.
Yeah, and to the detriment of others. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think some of the more, so those are all quite grandiose in essence, aren't they? Some of them, a covert narcissist would have, but it would be more disguised. And there are things to look out for in that sense, in terms of more really how you feel after you've been around the person who's the covert narcissist. So when you come away from them, you might feel like nothing you could have said or done in their eyes would have ever been good enough, that they'll have commented on all your imperfections, that they'll have...
And would they do that as a covert narcissist, essentially a shy narcissist that isn't putting themselves on that pedestal like an overt narcissist, like a Donald Trump or someone who's not so deluded to the point where they don't worry that they're going to be knocked down. But when they're saying those things, do they deliver those things, like if they're making comments on your appearance or things that you do, would they do that in a kind of less obvious way?
I think it could be highly obvious in terms of in your relationship with them, like quite open.
So they'd be
direct.
Open. Okay,
and
right.
It's just that they, maybe the amount that they reach a certain level of satisfaction as to the amount of power or control they've had over a unit or a system could be limited to a relationship of you and them, or your family, or maybe the, like, I can think of a coach when I was younger who he had the power and control,
yeah,
of our club, and that was enough for him. Whereas the more grandiose sort of style ones, they get this almost like a thirst and a hunger for more. It's not enough to just have the power and control of one small unit. They need to have power and control of a whole company, of a whole world, you know.
But I guess like once they've had a kind of micro success, that just gives them more confidence to do it to more people, right? So if they have 2 followers that, or 2 friends who are like, they've managed to manipulate essentially, then they're like, well, I could do this to more. There's going to be more people like this. And then it scales up, right? They go from being essentially like running a small business to a huge business. But those tendencies are just, if anything, amplified throughout that process.
I think that can definitely be true for some people. And I think there are others who are just sort of silently sabotaging people in their own small circumference, and that's enough.
And that's the difference really between the two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Yeah, so it's noticing, so in a workplace, for example, it might be that you have a boss who keeps piling things on with little care of whether or not you're coping. There's always this sense of a lack of empathy, a lack of understanding, a lack of appreciation for you as an individual. They're just not interested in you. They're not interested in who you are, other than the fact that you've got the skills to do the job. They don't care about what you did at the weekend. They don't care about achievements that you might have had out of the workplace. They just care about you fulfilling the things they need you to fulfill for their own gain and success.
So you're just, you are just there purely for their propulsion, yeah, towards whatever
and
they
will make it quite clear that you're disposable of, so that you're kind of hanging on in there doing whatever needs to be done.
Oh, I'm frustrated just thinking about this, Jane. Fired. I know people like this, or I've worked with people like this, and I can feel it bubbling up in me. My shoulders are getting tense because it is, I've been in a situation with people like that, and I look back on myself and I think, God, I was so weak in a way not to say anything. I just didn't know what to say or how to deal with it. And, you know, my reaction was to just leave a job or a friendship. But, yeah, it's just, oh, it brings up all those feelings again. Just thinking about that. I don't know if I've got an issue with someone being selfish or being, direct. But there's so much more to it than just that, isn't there? There's other... To be a full narcissist, that would be one element of it, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, in a workplace context, the very kind of dangerous part can be that a whole company culture can be set up in such a way that narcissism dictates the tone of the organisation. And if you don't comply, step aside. And really, that example you gave at the beginning is an excellent example of, do you remember we did an episode where we talked about all the Johns needing to stick together?
Oh, yeah.
And
my good old mate John.
And push back. It's like, unless we notice that there are others also being subjected to the similar struggle that we're having, and we kind of unite and push back, then on our own against a narcissist in a role in the way that it's gone on at BrewDog, really it is very difficult, other than to just decide that this environment is so toxic and it's taking a toll on your health and well-being, that leaving it is the best thing actually to do in most situations. But the only thing is, if we don't address it, highlight it now as a, you know, in society, and push back and take these narcissists down, then we're only going to create and recreate more and more environments that people are just subjected to and fall by the wayside, and that will perpetuate for our children to go into. It's like, we need to change that. I mean, I've been up against narcissists before. I have literally had the conversations to their face. Like, I remember when I was working at the BBC, and I had this unrealistic workload, and I went to my line manager and said, look, here are the number of hours I have in a day. Here are the tasks I've been given. Here's how much time each of those tasks take. And here's the shortfall I have. And there's something needs to happen to make this sustainable for me. And she just simply turned around and said, you either find a way to do the work by doing more hours, or you leave. It's like, that's it.
Wow, there was that is so supportive.
Yeah. But I think sometimes we don't realise it is their way or the highway. And
it's so frustrating, isn't it? Just listening to that again, it's just, you think, how could somebody be like that without having any empathy or any care to how they're making you feel when they say those things? It's just all about, it's very self-centred, but it's also, it is sabotaging another person's kind of well-being, isn't it?
But had I realised back then, because what I did was I basically took away from that meeting that I had to just work more hours, there was no other option, and I worked those hours and then ended up, you know, working myself to the bone, literally, like, and had I sort of thought to go higher than her and take it maybe to HR or take it to occupational health or take it somewhere else, but I was 20 something.
But also, you don't know at the time how she maybe didn't even let you think that that was an option, because she'd given herself the, or she projected an image of herself that she was, the buck stopped at her, you know, like you couldn't go any higher than her.
Yeah, all of that was going on, and it's great, the benefit of hindsight, but I feel, yeah, for this to be helpful to anybody who's listening, it really is a case in an organisation, if you're working with somebody like that, there are very few options other than following what they dictate, bringing it to the attention of someone who has the power to do something about it. And if the person above them is similar, then it's very hard, right? You know, taking it like BrewDog's staff have and exposing it more publicly, that could help. Or save yourself, ultimately, take yourself out of that arena. And so so that's like the workplace context. And as much as I feel we've got time to delve today, but because we do still want to cover covert narcissism, right? Because what happens when it's in your relationship arena? What happens when it's with a family member?
You can't like just walk away sometimes, can you?
Well, sometimes you absolutely have to. If you're married to somebody who's an outright narcissist and you've just come to the awareness of that and you're spending every day shrinking smaller and smaller into yourself because they've pummeled you and like led you to believe that you're worthy of...
Stripped you of all your confidence. Yeah.
You know, that why put up with that? You really have to disentangle from their torture and step away. And that's a really big, big thing for people to do. But what happens when it's somebody that you can't separate from, that is a person in your family who you're either their son or daughter or sibling, or you're in a situation where it's that bit more difficult. You can't, you know, simply decide, I don't want to live with this person anymore. And how do you contend with somebody like that who's maybe subjected you to their torment your whole life?
Well, I guess some of the things we talked about before we started recording this were that you have to sort of detach yourself from the situation slightly, I guess. A few of the things you mentioned were about setting clear boundaries. Mm-hmm. So if you feel a conversation is going down a certain path and it's repeating stuff that always comes up when you're having conversations with that person, because ultimately the covert narcissist is wanting to steer a conversation into a certain direction, generally towards what they want to talk about, yeah, and what they want to do, but also it's where the kind of the digs come out and the you're not good enough, you should be doing this, or whatever the rhetoric is. You want to have a kind of like, I don't want to say safe word. It's like, you know, because they, you know, but you maybe would discuss it with them and say, look, this is happening all the time. If we start talking about this, I don't want to engage in it. So we both agree that as soon as you start doing this, I'm going to say a word or a thing, or I'm just going to say, let's not talk about it anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's how you can, I guess, set a boundary.
Yeah.
Another thing that you spoke about was, don't take it personally. That's not necessarily the easiest thing to do, right? Because in the heat of the moment, it's great saying, oh, don't take it personally. But when you're in that moment and someone is laying into you, it may not be aggressively, it may be passive aggressively,
often.
But it's continual. Yeah. And I think pummeling is a good word, because it's kind of like a gentle pummeling of like, you know, criticism and stripping you of your confidence. You should try not to take it personally. And that is detaching yourself from what they're saying. Their words aren't true. Their words are being used by them to manipulate you.
Yeah.
And make you feel... And distort the truth and make you feel guilty. And if you approach any conversation you have with that person... Because this could come out on a lovely day in a pub garden and you're having a great time. And then one comment could lead to this whole spiralling of a conversation. So if you can... just prepare yourself to disengage from that and think, these words aren't true. They don't ring true with me. So therefore, let them say it, but don't take it personally. Easier said than done. I get that. And then one of the last things you said was create a healthy distance between yourself and that person.
Yeah.
So they make one of the kind of narcissists' techniques, especially a covert narcissist, is to slightly smother you. Mm. I guess that is the love bombing. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to say something about that, Jane, but how they can sort of.
Well, usually it's at the beginning of a relationship. So it's usually somebody would meet someone for the first time, they'd be overly charming. And then there'd maybe be, like, say, for example, the next day, flowers, text messages, chocolates.
Sounds familiar, Jane, when you first met me in Japan and we first met each other in person. You brought all those presents and stuff for me. And
I was
a little bit taken aback.
But they would smother you and then follow up with loads of verbal abuse. So they'd, like, give you all of this, like, either for physical forms of smothering or praise, but then as swiftly if they've done that, then be abusing you with the next breath. So that's more to do, like I say, at the start of a relationship, whereas further into things there's less of that and more just of the constant eroding of your self-worth, because they'll be criticizing you left, right and center, really, and nothing that you do is ever good enough. So even if you took to heart some of the things that they said and you made adjustments according to what they said that they would like to see, they wouldn't even acknowledge that you'd done anything different, and they would just be on to the next thing that you haven't done well enough or what they wish they could
This is a key point, right? And my experience with the few narcissists that I have encountered in my life is that, and I didn't know they were narcissists at the time. Sometimes it wasn't until we actually sort of started discussing relationships together that you'd flag that some of them, oh, that sounds like they're a narcissist. And then the more I looked into it, I was like, oh, wow, that does fit. But my experience is that you basically, whatever you do is never going to be good enough.
No.
And that's, if you actually accept that and digest that, then it's kind of liberating in the sense that, well, I don't need to do anything.
Yeah, because exactly.
The best that I could do, like anything, the best of anything that I could do for this person is still not going to be good enough.
Exactly.
So why bother trying to, do things that are naturally, that feel good to you. Doesn't mean you don't have to be nice to that person, but don't feel like you have to go above and beyond to that person to satisfy them, because you'll never satisfy them.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
And that's the same in a work situation. You could do the best bit of work and yet they wouldn't give you any credit or any support with it. They would just basically criticize it.
Yes, and quite often they will have some kind of perfectionism and maybe even obsessive compulsive disorder. So it really does mean that the way you would do something would never be up to their standards, because in their eyes only they are capable of doing something well enough. So like you say, you can never win, essentially. And you're not even trying to win. It's not that you're trying to get one over on them. It's just that you want something that's balanced and healthy. And so by making peace with the fact that you will never get there with that person, it does bring that sense of freedom. And all of a sudden, you don't need to try and please them anymore.
Which is a classic kind of person who's under a narcissist's control, almost, is you're trying to please them because they make you feel like you should be doing that.
Yeah.
And the guilt will be laden on you if you don't please them.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I find, is that the narcissist quite often, this is definitely true of the covert narcissist, will play this role of a victim. There'll always be this kind of, oh, woe is me sort of story, or, oh, they've been doing so much or working so hard or whatever the sort of unique rhetoric is of that person. And yet, really, for you to continue being subjected to the destruction of this person, you're being the victim. And once you realise that actually you have the ability to step out of being at their mercy, you no longer need to be their prey anymore. And that puts you in a completely different space altogether. If you can almost imagine that you're stepping out of your own shoes and you're observing what's going on, and you can see how they persecute you, how they then play the victim, looking for you to rescue them with doing things to please them. The moment you stop engaging in that game that they like to play is the moment you get your power back.
That's a good mantra for life. Try not to be the victim, right? Because it can be quite empowering if you just try, because often what they'll do is they'll that in a relationship, and it not necessarily in a narcissistic relationship with somebody, but they will want to pull you in the hole with them a lot of the time, and because it makes them feel better. But it also, it may be related to the past where they've been either your savior or you've been victims together of something, and it's taking you back to a place where they still hold on to you, but you may have changed and grown since then.
Yeah, and absolutely. But they'll try and keep you stuck there by recycling it again and again. Yeah. So yeah. So get out of that hole, step out of the game, as it were, and decide that okay, I'm starting afresh for myself. I know my own truth. I'm not going to be manipulated by this person. Start noticing the little kind of triggers, the cues that lead you into their traps, and nip it in the bud. As soon as you notice it starts happening, in your mind, step out of the game, disengage, don't entangle with it.
But also accept that you can't change that person. No. I'm not saying that they can't, their narcissism can't be cured or can't be gotten rid of. But you can't do that. Ultimately, someone's going to have to work on themselves to change that. And it's unlikely, if it's still going on as an adult, that they've... One of the things that they struggle with, I should say, is probably the self-awareness to know that they're doing it. So
And any kind of empathy.
Yeah, well, and the empathy things are really a really big part of it. Because I was watching an interview with someone in the world of sports recently, and talking about a, kind of an accident that had happened in the sport. And he is quite a prominent figure in this sport, and he just started crying when talking about it. But it seemed so fake and staged that I'd long thought he was an egotist, but I realised he's actually a narcissist. And
it's Lance Armstrong.
No, it's somebody else. But he basically, Lance Armstrong is a great example of that. But he basically started crying, and they just looked like crocodile tears. And the next moment, after he sort of answered that question, he was back to himself trying to sell something else. And I thought... Do you know what? That, to me, just shows kind of a true lack of empathy. And that's very hard to deal with when you're a loving, caring person yourself, which many people who are trapped in, or most people who are trapped in a narcissistic relationship are. And they're giving the love and the empathy and the sympathy towards the person who is ultimately controlling them in that relationship. And it's doubly hard to take when you realise and you understand that that person doesn't have the empathy. So actually... I realised this a while ago with one of my relationships, that you could say something bad to that person and actually it wouldn't, because they've got this image of themselves, it wouldn't penetrate the sort of force field that they have around themselves. And you can't actually really upset them because they're not capable of the emotional response to be upset by something you could say to them. That's not to say you should bombard them with things that you think, because it's not going to make you or them feel better or worse. So avoid that. But my point was that... once you, again, understand that they're not capable of empathy, you're dealing with a completely different situation. Then you're not dealing with an emotional person. No. You're dealing with someone who's shut off their emotions. And you often see that. I see that with the Brian Rose situation when he gets criticised and stuff. Yeah, he does shut down some criticism, but I don't think it penetrates. No. I don't think he really... cares, because I don't think he would allow that to upset him, because otherwise he wouldn't keep going on the way he is. And there's different levels of that, right? Some people can bat off criticism because they're just confident in what they're doing. It doesn't mean they're a narcissist, but it's the empathy side of it that is driven.
Yeah, and the other thing that's unique to sort of each individual narcissist is their ability to kind of feign care.
Yeah.
So a bit like I remember watching a TV series back in... Was it the late... Oh, it was in the...
What series was it?
Dexter,
yes. That was 2000s, wasn't it? Like 2008, end something of, like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Anyway, he got very good at judging certain situations and how he knew that an emotionally intelligent individual would respond, the kind of things he should say to function and be perceived as normal. And so sometimes it's like narcissists will have a checklist of things of the... They've asked how you are. They've sort of faked care about maybe something that you've got going on in your life, like say an illness or a struggle you've had, but they don't really listen to your response. They don't actually retain any of the information. They don't go into it in any depth or detail because they're just not capable, and they don't they just don't care.
Because they're more self-centered, aren't they? And
they just want to move on to the next thing.
But I guess underpinning all of this is, it again, is like other things we've talked about. It's not about attaching blame to that person for having this condition, because that would have, that condition has existed in them because of something that's happened to them.
Yeah.
And once you can also understand that, you can take a step back and have a bigger view of what's going on.
And some compassion.
And compassion.
Because it's really sad.
It is sad. And compassion is another really important word, because once you have compassion for a situation, especially in a relationship like that, you start feeling better about yourself about it.
Mm.
Because you're then not feeling guilty. You're not feeling like it's your problem or you're causing this, because you're not. It's you're compassionate about that person and understanding that they may not be able to change, but they cannot have that hold over you, and they can't make you feel a way that you don't want to feel.
You can be compassionate about it, but you also have to have a larger amount of compassion for yourself so you don't allow that other person and be able to facilitate them continuing with something that has a negative effect on you. And so putting almost like placeholders, like positioning guards around you in a kind of metaphoric sense.
Spiritual guards, man.
To protect yourself from them, really, and to reconstruct your way of relating or sort of having that person in your life where there's a necessity for that, and where you can let go, cut cords and ties, and disentangle completely and step out of it. Do that, especially, well, each, you'll know if that's the right thing for you.
Those narcissists have significant parts in your life, whether it's in a relationship or it's as a boss or even further up, you know, like we've seen with BrewDog at the top of an organization. And it may feel like you're powerless to make the change, but look at that example. A group of employees have come out and they've spoken about it, and that's opening a discussion about it. And they've said in that letter that they're not expecting an apology, because I think it's telling. Like, the first thing I think one of the owners or founders replied to their response was, we're going to take these allegations, or however he worded it, seriously. The first thing a normal person would do would be to apologize. The first thing you should be like saying when someone's come out with this is, you know, checking yourself and having a deep look at why those things had happened, and then apologizing for them happening at least. But the fact that there was no apology just sort of
confirms,
underlines that, that there's narcissism there.
Because a narcissist can never be wrong.
So yeah, and that's the truth. And once you start, again, understanding that, you don't expect an apology, but you can share your experience with other people, and you'll be surprised how many other people. And I've been surprised, people I've talked to who have dealt with narcissists, and it's had a significant impact on their life, but they've come out the other side and they've either ended a relationship or they've walked away from a job, but they're in control of the situation.
Yeah.
And having that empowerment can really help you, I think.
Yeah. And it's healthy control.
It's not control in the sense that the narcissist is looking at it in control, where they're the puppeteer and you're just like being, the puppet on the strings. It's control as in, you know, you choose when to engage, and you choose when to let that person say something to you that you can take on board or not. And more often than not, you don't want to take on board anything they say, because it's hollow.
Yeah. Yeah. So really, we hope that through this conversation we've had, that we can re-inspire you in some sense, or kind of give you some sense of hope that there's a way through this, where you can identify that you're in the middle of it, perhaps yourself, either with a family member, a friend, a partner, or indeed in a workplace scenario. And as always, if we can help in any way, if you've got any questions or you'd like to do something personally with this, do get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Remember, you can get us at hello@balanceology.uk, visit our website balanceology.uk, or even DM us on Instagram, balanceology.uk, daily pictures and inspirational words from Jane herself.
And you?
Well, mine aren't so inspirational, but yours are more inspirational. But I'm trying to be the edgy Instagrammer. You're trying to be the spiritual, fake pseudo-spiritual Instagrammer.
I hope
anyway,
not.
Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to check out the podcast next week. And we hope you have a good week. Stay safe.
Bye for now.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you want to find out more about our work around narcissism, please do visit our YouTube channel as well, which is Balanceology on YouTube, and we'll have videos going up there shortly talking more broadly about narcissism, but also some of the other things that go alongside it and actions that narcissists take, such as gaslighting and having their flying monkeys around them, as well as love bombing. And we'll go into more detail about those. And of course, you can visit our Life Labs page on Psychology's Life Labs, where we have new videos going up weekly on various different topics, but we'll have one about narcissism going up there soon as well. Always check back on our Instagram and our Apple Podcasts page, and also on Spotify to find the latest episode of the podcast. And please do, if you have time, leave a review on any podcast site where you download this podcast, because it means the world to us. We'll get to get feedback from you guys, what you like and what you don't like, and it also will just help build the podcast slowly and gradually as we go along. Anyway, thank you very much, and we'll catch you on the next episode.